Okay, it's 3:01, so I guess we may as well get started. I would like to start this meeting by acknowledging with much gratitude that we are meeting today on the traditional and unceded lands of the Coast Salish people, and in particular, the Qualicum First Nation. So we have number one first item is the adoption of the agenda. David, you want to move that? Okay. Doug will second. All those in favor?
I just had a comment. I guess it's on the agenda. It's on the minutes of the July 10th meeting. And I just wanted to comment on section four. I don't know if this is to comment on the agenda or to comment on the minutes. Do you want me to wait and comment on the minutes?
Sure, unless it impacts the agenda, will it impact the discussion today?
No, not in terms of
okay.
The
agenda. Okay. Yeah, so let's adopt the agenda and then we'll look at that under the minutes. Okay, so all those in favor of adopting the agenda as is? Great. Okay, carried. Approval of the minutes.
Just because Kate is new and doesn't know people's names, so she needs to record who is the mover and the seconder.
I didn't say it out loud, but but if you haven't, let me know if you need clarification on anything.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Can I just say I can't see anyone who's in the room at the hall.
Neither can I.
All
I can see is a camera on the wall.
Okay. Well, now that we can see everyone's smiling faces, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. So does somebody want to move approval?
Is this where I can comment on section four recommendation from council?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll get a motion and a seconder so we have it on the table, and then if there's any changes, then we would amend or does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so Doug will move the minute approval of the minutes, and David, you want to second that? Okay. And now we're up for discussion, Marion. Do you have something?
Yeah. Section A, growing, processing, and so on, largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions of any human activity. And that's sort of been weighing on me. I mean, how can that possibly be true? So I went to the UN website, climate issues/food, and according to the UN, food processing, transportation, so on, distribution is about a third of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, and 60% of that is caused by large-scale livestock farming. In other words, feedlots, and then, you know, for instance, rainforest removed for grazing land and that kind of thing. But I think that statement in the Qualicum Beach Council's directives to the Environment and Sustainability Committee is unnecessarily alarmist in that the food production that goes on in Qualicum Beach is certainly not a concern, I wouldn't say, to the environment. The only issue that would be relevant to us would be transportation of food from long distances to here. So I would like to move that section of the, it's a recommendation from council. I don't know if we can amend it or not, but I would recommend that council amend that statement.
I don't think we can go back in time and amend council's, the recommendation. But what we could do is write something under approval of the minutes saying that the committee noted that
that food production is not a significant or any kind of a contributor to greenhouse gas emissions in Pollokham Beach.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we can say that because we've never really looked into that, or we don't know. You know, there are some farms in Pollokham Beach, so. But what we could say is that the committee does not maybe agree, or that the growing, processing, and eating of food is the largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions of any human activity.
Okay, let's just leave it at that then.
Okay, so Doug, you want to comment?
Well, I think it would be useful for all of us. I remember that Aaron forwarded the address, the link for the project drawdown, the video on the science basics, and the answer to the donut chart.
Right.
That's to do with food, right? Donuts.
Yeah.
showing the breakdown of all the greenhouse gases. And the interesting thing about it is you can break it down in different ways. Like it showed that CO2 emissions from burning fossil fuel were about 60 or 70% right there. But then you might break that down and say, how much of that fossil fuel is being used for refrigerating and transporting food? So, you know, you could lump in different emissions in different categories, choosing, and you could make it look like the food system wasn't being the single biggest one by making it all one. Or you could say, no, let's separate out the transportation of food from the other one. So, it isn't necessarily a terribly meaningful statement to say that something is the largest contributor. It depends on what you lump and what you split.
Yeah.
But I think it is true that, now what I'm thinking about is the other thing that Anne forwarded us, the difference between, what was it called, the territorial versus the consumption-based inventory.
Yes. Yes.
And if we look at the consumption-based inventory, and sort of the greenhouse gas, not only what we do here, but things that we bring into our region for our own consumption, then the greenhouse gases associated with food production are a significant part of what we do in Pollokham Beach.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I would suggest it would be better treated under our transportation heading, in that shipping food long distances, shipping it from storage depots to Pollokham Beach is probably the main impact of food consumption, but certainly not growing. Anyway, I'm comfortable to leave it for now and address it later on.
Okay. Karen, you wanted to?
Yeah, I just want to say when we're talking about food, it's not just, I think, Doug alluded to this, but also it's a question of how our choices in what we eat impacts climate change as well. And so it's equally misleading to say food production is not an issue just because of the types of food that are grown locally. It's when you talk about global emissions, food production, particularly, as you said, feedlots and so on, are a major contributor. And I don't want to see us sort of wading into things that actually have, you know, global implications.
Right.
Yeah.
And that we can't do anything about.
Well, we can, actually.
Yeah, not buying food from, anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the approval of the minutes, do we want to approve them then as is, and maybe note there was discussion around the impact of growing, processing, and eating food as the largest contributor to greenhouse gas, that statement?
Sure, we could leave it at that.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so approval of the minutes, not as amended, but as discussed. How's that?
I move. So move.
Okay. Okay. We had Doug and David originally move and second this, so okay. we just need all those in favor. Okay, so that's carried. Business arising from the minutes. I did have a few things, but I chatted with Luke just before the meeting, and I was going to raise them under new business because that's where we're discussing the research for climate change workshop and the workshop, our preparations there. So does anybody else have any other business arising from the minutes? Nope. Okay. So
Maybe one thing. On page 4 of the total agenda package, so
yeah.
It's just the second page of the minutes as such, where we talked about the workshop intention. Luke said there was work done by the RDM on step code, and that would be available in September, and so would we perhaps have it before our workshop? So that's, I guess, is that business arising from the minutes, whether we would have that information from RDN work?
Sure.
Time for October?
Yeah, I can answer that. Yes, I think we will.
Okay.
There's a draft report that was circulated late on Friday, so going through a bit of feedback, but it'll certainly be public.
Great, thank you.
That was on my list, too. So it's been dealt with. That's good. Okay. So on to recommendations from council, and we have the one that's outstanding from May with regard to the Food Action Plan strategic initiative. And so I think we agreed that we would wait until after the workshop to deal with this one. Some of this could come up during the discussion in the workshop, depending on our timing. That's what we decided, that we would deal with transportation and buildings, and if there were time, we could also talk about food security. So,
okay.
So we'll just move on from that one. And then status of recommendations to council. There was a motion from the July 10th meeting. I don't think that's come forward yet. But I did send a note to Bernadette to ask to make sure to have this on the next council agenda. So that will just sit there until it goes before council and we have an update as to whether or not it was adopted. Number 6, ongoing business. That's pretty much what we're doing. It's about the workshop. Gives a bit of the background. And I guess that would lead us into new business where we're going to have the bulk of our discussion. Unless anybody has any questions or anything about that. Just providing the, I guess, how we got to today with regard to the workshop. Okay, so number 7 is new business discussion on research for climate change workshop, and I know Luke has met with Graham and has some information and requests, I guess, at the committee.
Okay, so I had a meeting with Graham on Friday. He's looking forward to having this event and something that the organization, our supplier experience, is hoping to do a bit more of, so this is a good way to transition into more of that role. So. He asked a lot of the same questions that we've discussed in previous meetings in terms of he wanted clarity on exactly what it was that the committee would like to achieve in the meeting, and I couldn't really provide that because the committee hasn't been entirely clear. So if we could gain a little more clarity through the discussion today, that would help Graham. But we also had an interesting conversation about what the workshop could be. Sort of heading in a slightly different direction, and that was more about having a clear vision for what the town of Powhatan Beach itself could be in a climate-friendly future. So, and then the second part of that is what is the role of a town like Powhatan Beach in the global context of climate change? Because there's climate change is a very, like, mammoth global issue, and it's often really hard to localize that to local action. And so, you know, we were talking about how providing a bit of a framework to help people understand how that works and how that localizes might be kind of nice. And he had a good idea. He has a student at DIU that does that. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, visual note-taking, like, where they, you know, you have a meeting. So let's just say we have a meeting about a vision for the town in the global context of climate action. And then the whole time, this person's, like, drawing visual representations of your idea. And so at the end of the meeting, you have, like, this big kind of mural thing that's, like, a graphic. You know, it looks a bit like really high quality graffiti. You know, that's don't take that in a bad way. I think graffiti can be cool. So anyway, she's borderline professional at it. Like she gets paid to do this, and he said she may do it at a reduced cost. She's a student, you know, wants to build her professional portfolio. So it kind of dovetails nicely with the concept of visioning exercise. So when we talk about where does this $1,000 of resources go, hiring her potentially would be a relatively small portion of that. But then we talked about the fact that the committee had expressed interest in maybe having a public facing side to this at this meeting, and we talked about the fact that for this meeting it's probably not the right venue to bring the public in. But he said, well, maybe it is a follow-up. Maybe this isn't the chance to spend all that money. Maybe we reserve a little bit of it, or most of it, and use that towards, like, a more public-facing presentation of this kind of vision board thing, you know, to get more discussion going with the broader community. So throwing that out there. So there's a few ways that the meeting today could go. You know, one, we could provide a bit more clarity back to Graham and say, you know, we know what we want to get out of this meeting, and here it is, and we'd like to, you know, whatever research needs to happen to advance that discussion, let's do it. Or if you guys are interested in the concept of this, you know, more of a visioning of what the town could be, and that visual recognizing the artworks concept, then that's also a good way to go. And I think they can both be good. So that's the summary of the conversation. He's very keen to go any of these directions.
Does anybody have any thoughts? David?
Well, I think particularly for, obviously it could apply to our workshop as well, particularly for a public follow-up. I think a sort of a visual consolidation of all the ideas that are out there is really useful, because not everybody, a lot of people are visual learners, and that's where things stick. Yeah. And it also, I think, serves to kind of keep discussion on track as well. You can see visually where you've been. And I don't know, I just think that would help to focus discussion and help to draw things together as a sort of a conclusion as well.
So you see it as a workshop or as a public-facing one?
Well, quite possibly both. I mean the introducing it at the workshop might be a good precursor, you know, to a public meeting, give us an idea of what the effect of that would be, and then we can go from there.
Make a note. Does anybody, Marianne, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I guess I feel strongly that this is not a visioning process that we should be involved in, but coming up with clear actionable items for council. I would really like to see this workshop come out with some clear recommendations of doable items that council could implement in order to combat this climate emergency. And just by the way, I enjoyed the book that Doug lent me called A Good War by Seth Klein. And he recommends calling this a climate emergency rather than a climate change, because it is an emergency. He suggests going on a kind of war footing and dealing with this the way the Second World War was dealt with, where radical changes were made in order to deal with something that was a clear and present danger to our community and the world. So I think it would be much more useful to council for us to come up with, as I say, some clear actionable items. If we looked at the Saanich climate change action plan, it had a detailed list of goals, objectives, and strategies and so on, but when it came to the crunch of how it would be implemented, the only item they had in the plan was, well, we'll ask council for more money to implement this plan. I think that we need to come up with implementation items.
Okay. Thank you. Greg, do you have any thoughts on this?
Not a lot of detail. I actually agree with most of what was just said there, and I think that it, to kind of emphasize on actionable items rather than get into too much of a sort of visioning process.
Thank you. Doug, I can see you're ready to jump in. Karen, do you want to go next?
I'm of two minds. I can see the value in both. And I don't think approaching it as a visioning exercise precludes us coming up with actionable items. So I don't, unless I'm mistaken, this is the first time this committee's ever done anything like this. So I see real utility in everybody feeling like nothing's off the table. We can throw ideas around. I'm not suggesting we would sit there and do that for 4 hours, but I think that can really get the juices flowing, and I see the value in that. And I agree we need actionable items, but as I say, I don't think it's we're precluded from coming up with those just because we approach it in an innovative way. So I can see both sides of that.
Yeah. Thank you. Doug, do you have any thoughts?
I guess I'm sort of where Karen is too. I immediately had this, it was appealing, the idea of the vision, but once Marion said that about, we need doable items, I had to agree 100% with what you're saying. So I'm not sure where to, I think, if we do the, what Luke referred to as the community-facing exercise, then a sort of visioning kind of thing might be good at that level. And one thing that occurred to me is if we do that, I know I'm getting ahead of things a little bit here, if we do that, it would be great to not be just one way, not just be asking the community, what do you think, but presenting some information too. Like that video from the project drawdown that really kind of gave us a really good 20-minute kind of big picture overview. That would be tremendous to show that at the start of a public-facing thing, because there's a tendency when talking with the public that you start on climate change, and then each individual kind of goes to what they already know and think is the big issue, and they don't necessarily all agree on what the big picture is and what the big items are. So anyhow, I know I'm kind of getting ahead of myself with that. So for our meeting, if I like the idea of the visual note-taking. I definitely think we want to spend a significant amount of time on doable items, but if there's a feeling that a visioning exercise would be useful too, then we could say let's do our first hour as a visioning exercise, with always keeping in mind, well, if that's the vision, what action does it lead to? Would that be a workable way to proceed? I don't know.
I like that.
Or am I trying to just...
No, I think that's... having the students come and sit there for 4 hours, probably isn't what we want.
right? Or that's a long time. So I was thinking when you threw that out there, yeah, to do that kind of brainstorming in the beginning and have the visual and then work out from that with the deliverables and the, you know, the action plan, I guess, with that sort of as our guiding vision. Could work, I think. Maybe, I don't know how long, you know, would it be an hour or?
No, I think they
do the whole time.
Yeah. Like, Luke and I have seen this done at a conference in Victoria, Italy, and they had a very good artist there. And she just spent the whole time, everybody's talking, citations are being made, just putting this great, big, huge cartoon together. And it takes quite a bit of time to do a good piece of artwork. But when it was done, it was a very, very interesting record that people will look at and point to and talk about, as opposed to, like, oh, here's the report that those people did on what they spent that day on. And, like, I think this is a good starting place. And then if you have a second, more public engagement, which is not the place to do it, I think, because, you know, that's just like,
yeah,
you know,
it could be anywhere. Yeah.
And I think this is a good pickup point where, you know,
right,
a moderator can sort of talk about and, you know, discuss the various things that led to the things in the image. And it's a permanent record that can be up in, you know, in front of town hall, and people can walk in and, you know, look at it and talk about it and point at it and ask questions. It's, you know, I think it has worth. And, you know, the most difficult thing about all of this is getting more people engaged.
Yeah.
And I think that's where its value might be. That's
so in that
visioning,
like, can you get specific or, mm-hmm, you know, like I'm thinking right now, David sent out the article to us about the city of Nanaimo is now prohibiting gas in any new builds except, well, for heating, right? So could something that specific be part of?
Oh, for sure. Like, you know, she might draw like a crap of cold brews and big stop sign on the gas compression crews. That is exactly the way they kind of do it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It does sound like fun. Harry.
He just knows there's little enough of that.
Yeah.
Well, I agree that there's room for both a visioning exercise and coming up with doable implementation items. It seems to me that, as I think David said, a lot of the public are visual learners, and they do respond to visual images with probably more interest than just pages of notes. But so I think that if a student were to be hired, like Luke, you, in your conversation with Graham, he suggested that possibly after the workshop there could be a public meeting, and that the money that could have been used for the workshop could go to this public meeting. And I think that's where visuals, if the student were to come up with visuals, would be really useful in the public meeting. But I think that what this committee has to come up with are doable things within the scope of a local government. It's all very well to kind of visualize a community, but there are only certain powers that a municipality has, and there are also all kinds of political realities as to what the public can be brought along to accept. And so that's why I think that just dealing with what can possibly be done immediately, because, as I say, this is a climate emergency, not something that we have years and years to decide what to do about.
Yeah, good point.
Just for clarity, Bob, yes, you suggested that you felt the visual note-taking was more appropriate for the small groups. Did I hear you right?
I think so, because I think it'll be a little more focused. You'll have stuff to work with a little more time. And basically, you don't necessarily look over shoulder what she's doing. She's just doing it in the background of your discussions, taking what you're talking about and sort of translating it to images.
Right, and that wouldn't necessarily be the only record. For instance, if we're talking and somebody says, I really want us to recommend to council that there's no new gas hookups in residential construction, she can draw a picture of it, but that could be a really
good on the record.
Yeah.
We need it. So I don't think we need recording. We need a recorder.
Mm-hmm. We'll probably help.
We would have someone taking notes.
Yeah. It's on a Friday, so we can.
So as long as the fees are doing it is reasonable, I don't see that we have a lot to lose if I'm missing something. And maybe something good to gain.
Yeah, so one possible way we could structure it would be to, spend a bit of time, talking about that vision and then talk about the ways to get to that vision, and that would certainly lend itself really well to a graphic representation of like the two transitioning from one picture kind of to the other. And then I don't think there's necessarily a conflict with, so if you like the idea of exploring the graphic note taking, then we'll say, yeah, let's try that.
Okay.
And then just getting some clarity in terms of the overall structure of the meeting. And sounds like there's interest in making sure we have time to explore specific outcomes. But there's also interest in doing the visioning. Of course, we want to have all the time to, think we're on the cake and the eating. So we want to get kind of what I need to do. Yeah, so, but we can split the time and try to venture into both those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like the direction we want to go?
Yes.
Should both include visioning and specific?
So one question I had, Bob, since you've experienced this, is the actual process of the visioning with the artist, is that being displayed for everybody in real time?
Well, it was in the case of this presentation, but like if this was the sort of auditorium and people were presenting on the stage, she was like tucked over in the corner. Right. And people could sort of see that she was up to something, but you went over and looked at it at coffee break the last time.
Well, I see.
Presenters.
So it wasn't sort of displayed on a big board or on a screen or?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah. You could see it happening. She was just sort of left to her work.
Right.
So we're going to be in this room, right? So is there room for?
Maybe she could set up out there.
Once we have an idea of the numbers, we'll figure it out. She just might want to have it on the table and be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't really look at it all that much.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the general consensus then for Luke to,
I just found an example of the type of stuff that we're talking about here. This is from 2019. But it's a similar style.
Can't see it. Can you?
This is a crude way of sharing my screen.
All right.
Yeah. So if you were to search, the artist has a website called, we'll just try to send a link afterwards.
Okay.
Good idea. I remember what I'm talking about.
Okay. I do have a question. So we're kind of looking at doing a visioning session and then also getting into some specifics, right? Is there things that the committee members can be doing ahead of time to come prepared, whether it's like specific items or, and we talked about having the students maybe do a bit of research ahead of time for us? Is there anything that we should be, I like to have feeling prepared for something like this or, having my notes or whatnot. So I just wonder what committee members can be doing to prepare so that we get the most out of this session.
Yeah. I think pretty well all of us were kind of all aware of the kind of global dimension of what we're talking about. But I think going to what Marion had to say, we need for us to be the... We need for us focused on things that are doable within the framework of the municipality, what the municipality can do, what the local populace can get behind, and so on and so forth. So if we're going to do any homework, I would think that should be
that should be our focus, just so that we have parameters to work within.
Yeah. Or if there's certain things that are really you're concerned about or passionate about or areas of interest or whatever, bringing those.
But they should be doable within our context.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Marion's hand go up and then done.
Is it acceptable for committee members to be emailing each other our ideas and having a kind of out of meeting discussion on which ideas seem to have merit?
So go ahead, Luke.
It's definitely strongly discouraged, because if you have more than half of the committee engaged in the discussion, it's actually considered a meeting. So technically the answer is a strong no. If you have any interactions, I don't want to hear about it.
And if there's somebody on the committee that you wanted to discuss something with individually, then that's fine. Right? On a one-to-one basis, if you wanted to bounce something off as another committee member, I don't see that being an issue.
Well, I mean, Doug did that with that paper he prepared.
Yeah.
And I did that this morning with that notice, so.
Yeah, I did a project drop-down as well. I sent that around to everyone, too. So that's a little bit different, though. That's just here's a link, so to say.
Yeah, there's no discussion or decision making.
Not really, no, no.
Because of it. It's more of an informative piece, right? Yeah. Okay, Doug and then Karen.
I don't know if everybody's had a chance, but we had the Standards Climate Plan, which you provided to me. I took it in and got it balanced, so just make it nicer to handle. So I'm happy to pass this paper copy on to whoever wants to use it next. I found I went through the whole thing and made notes, and that helped me to clarify my thinking, because it is a municipal level plan. It is focused on exactly what you're talking about, things that are doable at municipal level. So that's a resource for comparing. Anybody wants to step on to you, see, certainly you could take it away.
Yeah, or data, whatever you can share. Yeah, or it is online too. I'm just more of a paper person.
Exactly. Does
the scale of, for instance, Saanich is a much larger community, and that's what we're talking, 100,000 people or so. Do you see that having an impact on the practicality of some of the things that they're going to deal with, Doug?
Yeah, but it's not a wholly different matter.
Yeah.
They deal with a lot of the same stuff,
yeah,
to be honest.
Yeah.
At least that was my impression.
Right.
Karen.
And I just want to be that person who jumps in again and says, just because the town can't do something doesn't mean the town can't advocate for something to be done with high level government or with the public. And so I don't want to see us get too bound up in jurisdictional concerns. Not that it doesn't affect how we proceed. I get that, but it can be very, very effective to be a voice at a larger table, too. And some of the stuff that happens at UDCM, for example, wouldn't happen if a town or a municipality didn't come up with the idea. So those ideas are valuable.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be advocating, right? Putting a resolution forward to AVICC and UBCM. Yeah.
Well, for instance, what Gibson did with their ecological accounting and so on as well, that wasn't a common sort of practice, a number of years ago, I don't think, anyway. So that's something they pushed forward, and it's being adopted elsewhere now, too.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we had talked about previously was Doug had broken it down by regulations, incentives, advocacy, and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
The things that are in our control, direct and indirectly, and then within our influence, directly and indirectly.
Mm-hmm.
Marion?
The other thing we talked about was dividing the issues into adaptation and mitigation. And on thinking about it, adaptation is more of a sort of social or economic activity. And if this committee is, I mean, if our purview is specifically the environmental aspects of sustainability, then the social and economic adaptations that have to take place to deal with the climate emergency that's happening out there should not be our focus, that is my understanding. And instead, what I see as the Committee on Environmental Sustainability from an environmental perspective is that we should be looking at how to protect the environment from human activities, basically. So if I would assume that our bailiwick is to take a kind of mitigation approach as opposed to an adaptation approach. Does that sound fair? Is that
That's kind of how we got here, because the this is my understanding of how this all unfolded, but the town does have a climate change adaptation plan. And then council was asking the committees for more information because of some presentations that we had had to council, such as the Fridays for the Future and others. They wanted us to take a lens of mitigation and what does that look like, because yes, there is an adaptation plan that the town has already adopted.
So that kind of limits, in a way, our perspective. We're looking at a lens of how to prevent human-caused impacts on the environment, specifically on the climate.
Yes.
In this workshop.
Yes. Is Graham aware of that?
To some extent.
Okay.
Yeah. And he said that he was going to be doing a lot of policy review, regardless of which direction we go in terms of making sure he's fresh on what the town has in place in terms of mitigation and adaptation. Also make sure he gets a copy of that report regarding the step code and options at the regional level. I think everyone will find that pretty interesting. So that's some updated statistics on the town's progress on various climate action initiatives too, which is very interesting.
Yeah, it's nice when we can get specific information.
Finally.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And then Graham was part of the adaptation plan.
Mm-hmm.
He participated in that. So he is somewhat familiar with the work that the town has done in that area. Yeah. Any other thoughts?
I always have more thoughts. One of the things that we have talked about was sort of centering the scope of the workshop on the two major issues that showed up from the studies that have been done in Qualicum Beach so far. My understanding is that the two major impacts on climate change are transportation and the built environment. So is there any level of agreement that this should sort of be the starting point or the focus for the workshop?
Yeah, I think we did. We had decided that at the last meeting. So the committee confirmed the workshop will be in September. Close. With primary focus on transportation and building, with the option to explore other items if time allows.
Right. Okay. So if we start off in a sort of visioning exercise, that we would be visioning how we would like Qualicum Beach to look in terms of transportation, or how we would want it to look, not look, but how it would be a climate-friendly community in terms of transportation and buildings.
Yeah. But then to Karen's point, sometimes we don't want to limit ourselves either. So we can expand that. But
right.
Yeah.
That was what I think we agreed would be our primary focus as to where the most impact could be made.
And then food security as a kind of third area.
Yeah. Doug.
Well, not to get ahead of ourselves and to sort of jump into the actual workshop topic, but thinking about that, transportation and buildings, and what does the town have under its direct control? And so one thing we might be doing is coming back and asking Bob, for example, what buildings does the town own and operate, and how are they heated, and what are the options? And what vehicles does the town own and operate, and how much do they emit? So would it be an option for you to come to the workshop sort of armed with some basic material on that?
Facilities review, have enough?
We used to report up until last year. We were reporting as a part of the province's GHG emissions. So we have utility information.
Right. I know I got the report from Ron Amos, who's the secretary treasurer for the school district, and they can show their emissions from all their buildings by year, whether it's from gas or propane, and they didn't have emissions from vehicles. They didn't have a list of every single vehicle they owned, but you know how much they were emitting by vehicles and the fleet that they own. So that might be interesting if you have that information, so we could.
I know it was compiled. I don't know what the format is, how user friendly it is. So
yeah,
we'll get into it. Yeah.
And I think the other thing we talked about too in preparation related to transportation was the transit from the RDN, whether there was any information that would be helpful for us at the workshop as well. So. Yeah, go ahead.
We mentioned there was mention of a student willing to do some research in preparation for the workshop, and if we're looking at the whole question of buildings and the amount of G's buildings are emitting and how much they can be limited through various regulations. I'm wondering whether or not we have enough information on solar power. I was trying to do some research myself, and I guess I don't understand why solar power isn't more of the conversation. And what are the possibilities? You know, if we're visioning a community with a built infrastructure that isn't contributing to huge amounts of greenhouse gas emissions, solar would seem to play a huge part in that. And how could that be used in our workshop? How could we get more information so we would have a better understanding of it?
If I could, I think the reason that in BC there's not as much of a push for solar is because our power grid is much cleaner than most places. So I think we're about 95% from hydro, as an hydroelectric. So, yeah, yes, there are environmental implications, of course, but there are also environmental implications in the production of solar panels. So that's why the emphasis has really been on moving away from natural gas towards things like heat pumps and less in terms of encouraging people to do solar. Although, of course, there are rebates and incentives, but those actually come from the federal government, not from the provincial government.
Some from the provincial
Okay.
Cool. Thanks. Sorry. I had a comment on that. I think before Marianne was on the committee, we did a field trip and to a fellow there who had quite an interesting solar setup. And I can't remember if there was information passed around after that one or not, but
He sent we got something.
He did have information that he provided and I had given it to Bernadette. I think she was going to scan it and send it to everyone, so I don't know if that ever happened. Did anybody remember getting that information?
I don't remember getting it.
I don't remember. Okay.
Okay, so we can get Bernadette to circulate that. But yes, we did do that field trip. Okay, so your new business? No. Okay. Doug, you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, on this question of solar energy, we put solar panels over photovoltaic panels on the roof of our house, and people did say, well, why do you bother? You're already getting clean energy from BC Hydro, but if we're not buying it from BC Hydro, BC Hydro can export it to some other place that's burning coal, and so there still is a greenhouse gas reduction of us not buying it from Hydro, so that's one aspect of it, and also it just it sort of felt like a kind of a leadership thing we could be doing to demonstrate that it was important to us that we would spend our money on putting solar panels on our roof rather than going on a holiday or buying a second car or other things that you might do with it. It felt like a worthwhile thing to invest in for us.
Yeah, I was a strong opponent of Site C, damming Site C, and the only trouble with hydro, of course, is the damming and the destruction of ecosystems. Site C flooded farmland, indigenous land, and interrupts the flow of the river. And then there's the whole question of distribution of the power, huge power lines crossing the country, whereas solar is a, you know, individual residents creating their own power. And in the article that David sent out about Nanaimo, it was interesting that the hydro guy stood up and said, oh, there's lots and lots of hydro, and no problem, we'll have electricity forever. Well, but what does that mean? Does that mean damming more rivers? Pardon me. Also, I'm hearing from people in the business that there is going to be a strain on the electricity system. But if everybody goes to electric cars and electric homes, what will that mean in terms of creating more hydropower? And this is why I would be really interested in getting some more information about this and about the potential for solar to take up the slack, as Doug says, but also, I don't know about exporting it, but at least to limit the need for additional hydro installations and dams.
Yeah, I think, in our workshop we're going to have lots of great conversations. And I do know that some other municipalities are providing what they call a concierge service for residents when it comes to heat pumps. So they basically handhold residents through the process and help them with all the rebates that are available and whatnot. And I think, you know, similar things could be done for solar or other initiatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the cost is on that, and I think it's Squamish and one other are providing that program, but it's quite an interesting, I think, approach to...
Yeah, solar is a little more complicated, I think, Doug.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't difficult for us, really. You just get an electrical permit, put the solar panels on your roof, and hook it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have what's called a net metering agreement with Hydro. So when your solar panels are producing more than you're using, you're actually feeding power into the grid, and Hydro is giving you a credit.
Right.
So right now we have a credit with Hydro that we're not going to get a Hydro bill until sometime after Christmas.
Wow.
We pay $15 every 2 months for just the fact of having an account,
right.
But that's all that's on the bill until about February, and then we'll start paying because we've used up our credit. And then by April, we're back in sort of a neutral position that we're producing as much as we use. So we're only paying a few hundred dollars a year in hydro bills. And that's for the electric car and heating the house.
And can I ask you, are you storing it so you can use it in the event of a power outage too?
No, if you wanted to invest in like one of those Tesla power walls or something like that,
yeah,
you could. But, you know, we found that hydro is pretty reliable here. We haven't had a lot of power outages. You could do that.
And well, that's what the guy who when we went on the field trip, he has that. And that was quite impressive, actually.
And the technology that's going to be coming in a few years is if you have an electric car, it'll have what they call two-way or vehicle-to-grid technology. Mm-hmm. So your car battery will be your backup battery.
Ah.
So that if your power goes out, you'll be drawing off your car.
Oh, cool.
They need to make investments in sort of smart grid technology to enable that to happen.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're kind of alarmist stuff about how electric vehicles are going to destabilize the grid, but in fact the opposite could happen. Electric vehicles could stabilize the grid by smoothing out the peaks of when power is being drawn. And another cool thing I'll just mention is about people saying, well, converting to heat pumps is going to overload the grid, but there's also houses that are heated with baseboard electricity. And for every house in Canada that's heated with gas, there are two heated with baseboards.
Mm-hmm.
And a heat pump uses roughly one-third as much electricity as baseboards. So for every house that you convert from baseboards to a heat pump, you free up enough electricity to convert two houses from gas to electricity without any additional consumption of electricity. In other words, we could convert all the houses in Canada to heat pump without any increase in total amount of electricity used. That interesting facts about heat pumps, that's called the coefficient of performance.
Mm-hmm.
Like the physicists will tell you that's impossible. It has 300% efficiency. It can't be. But the reason it does it is because it is pumping heat from the outside to the inside. It's using heat that already exists. Anyway, it's kind of a nerdy technical. So it's really fascinating that option exists. Anyway.
Okay, is there anything else on this one that we need to...
Well, did we get homework? I don't... You asked about whether we were going to get homework, and I guess I should just keep quiet. But, you know, I'm that kid in the classroom who puts their hand up at the end. What's the homework?
Well, I would just go through with some of your things that we talked about, maybe some of the minutes or some of the things that interest you and make some notes, things that you want to bring forward. I mean, we did talk about, you know, the town can regulate, the town can provide incentives, the town can advocate, and educate.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, if those are things, you know, there's lots there. I mean,
right. We've got different ideas and what really speaks to you. And
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Okay. I can do that. Nobody hates me now, right?
No, I appreciate that.
No, I think it's good to come. That's why I always like to do my homework too. So.
Keep an honest chairman.
And then all through the lens of mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right. We're focusing on mitigation. And then what's within our control or influence, I guess. Going back to our original conversation, what's within the scope or the framework of local government? And then be willing to think outside the box as well, right?
Yeah.
And then I put down the request for Bernadette to circulate the field trip notes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get that done. And then under new business, there were two other things that I had. One was hire a student to do the research. So, Marion, you already, I think, referenced that earlier in the conversation. And maybe we're going to spend some of that money on the visualization piece. Anyways, and then the other one was I was looking, unfortunately, Bernadette isn't here today. for any update on the youth members, because we had put forward a motion to council, which was approved, that I can't find it. But anyways, that that more youth members be accepted to the committee. And at least one, we'd like to get our one youth member back. But in the absence of that, I'm wondering if, and part of the reason why you planned to have this on a Friday was perhaps the Fridays for the Future students, or one or more, would be willing to come and be part of the workshop. So I'm wondering if we could perhaps make a motion that they be invited, that an invitation be extended now that we have a date and a time and location.
So move.
So this is the Fridays for the Future students.
How many?
Well, usually there's only a Keegan that's out there, but we might be able to recruit another person to maybe cover her spot outside or to come to the workshop. So
I was just thinking about space, that's all.
So I think it would be just one or two.
Yeah.
Probably.
A delegate?
Sure. But then Fridays for the Future, you'd be invited to send a delegate to the workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And David moved that. Do we have a seconder? Doug? Okay. All those in favor? Great. Okay. So that carries unanimously. I think that's it. I mean, normally we try to keep to about an hour. The future agenda items, again, we have the RDM presentation on water management, and now Julie has returned from Batley, so sometime in the fall, we could try to arrange that. Field trip findings, I think that might be this document, I'm not sure, from the solar trip. And then future field trips to explore examples of what a successfully implemented urban forest master plan can do for the community. So I'm not sure that, I mean, the East Village was part of that, but probably not all of that, right?
No, you mean when we talk about the tree planting techniques and whatnot?
Yeah.
That's just one component.
So we'll leave that one on for future. Okay. And then a motion to adjourn, unless anyone has any other pressing items. Or no? Okay, so we need a motion to adjourn then.
So move.
Okay, Marian? Seconder? I don't think we need a seconder. Okay, so it's just at 4:04 p.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone, see you soon. And so we'll send out the details just to remind everyone about the workshop, because that is the next time we're getting together.
Okay. Okay. See you then.
Bye. Bye. Okay. Did anybody-